Nation, Manx Radio.
This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service.
Manx Radio.
This is our planet, not a divided world. On the programme today, we're going deeper into the creation of Gaia, the awe-inspiring art installation in St. Thomas's Church. And we're getting ready to celebrate with the Salvation Army. And that's where we're going for our music, in the company of the International Staff Songsters of the Salvation Army, when the glory gets into your soul. International Staff Songsters of the Salvation Army and When the Glory Gets Into Your Soul. The Salvation Army is a church and a charity working at the heart of communities to offer practical help and support to transform lives. The challenges people were facing when the Army was founded over 150 years ago, the effects of homelessness, addiction, loneliness and unemployment are much the same today. The only difference is that the Salvation Army today is active in virtually every corner of the world, offering God's hope and love to anyone who's in need without discrimination. And it's this commitment to community that's made the Salvation Army a treasured part of our island life. For the last 5 years, the Army has been on the march, from the Lord Street Citadel to temporary accommodation in Fairfield Road School and finally to Ballacottia Crescent. All the uncertainties are over, the hard work is done, and it's time to celebrate next weekend at the official opening of the new Salvation Army Church and Community Centre on Ballacottia Crescent here in Douglas. The completely redeveloped and extended former Red Cross headquarters that's equipped not just for now, but for the foreseeable future, to provide a perfect base for Salvation Army worship alongside all the community outreach and activities that the Army offers. The work has been done by local businesses. A project steering group has provided a platform for views and ideas to be shared, but the burden of responsibility has fallen on the broad shoulders of Corps officers, Captains Dylan and Rachel Nevote, who amazingly, at this busy time, have spared me a few minutes for a quick chat.
Dylan, this is such an exciting time for you, isn't it?
It is. Thank you, Judith, for that lovely introduction. We're just so excited about the Salvation Army. We've been working towards this for a couple of years now, and to see it materialize into this lovely church and community center, it's very exciting, so much potential, and we look forward to what God has in store for us.
We've got a purpose-built building ready for our future plans, for our future programs, and to be able to empower us as a church and to be able to reach out into the community from this base. It's just such a privilege, such a blessing, and we're really excited about what the future holds for the Salvation Army here on the island.
Now, the wonderful thing about the Army and why I think it has such a strong core of support is that it's all about helping people, starting off by helping people with the practical problems that they've got: loneliness, poverty, debt, food shortage. It's all about sorting those things out and then showing them that you do it because of your love for God. But in order to do that, you've got to have the facilities, haven't you?
Yes, absolutely. We always need a really good base, a place to be able to retreat to be able to equip and empower our people. But as I've said, also a place that we can invite people into, that we can provide help and support for the community. And as you said, the Salvation Army was founded in the very early days on the basis that we see a need and we seek and search to meet that need.
There's always this quality of human nature. We live in the world that has a lot of brokenness. It's a messy world. And so recognizing that that's a perpetual state of the environment we live in, our view is that the Lord has shown us a way to improve our situation, to bring positive transformation. And as Christians, we want to do the same for others, to pass on that good, positive transformation wherever we can.
Caring for parents and toddlers and carers and toddlers is something that the Army has always done on the island. But here, you've reached the point where people are coming from all over the island and you've reached capacity, being 75 children. Why is this so popular, Dylan?
We've obviously designed the space to be inviting to everybody. And our vision is to have different community programs that will cater from the young to the old. One of our initiatives is our parents and toddler group, and it's doing really well. I can only give credit to the volunteers who have invested their time and energy in making that space inviting and welcoming. Within that space, we have various activities, from tea and toast to craft time to bubbles, which is a crowd favorite. We've got singing and dancing, but more importantly, we make sure to build good relationships with everybody, that everybody feels safe and at home in that environment. And recently, we've introduced an online booking system. And already the first week, we were booked at capacity at 70. We add a couple numbers for volunteers and a few for walk-ins. But it's great to see that we're using new technology just to make sure the environment stays comfortable and safe for everybody.
It's wonderful that there is so much going on, and you can feel the vibrancy of this building when you come in. It's got a lovely atmosphere, which I think is quite special for a new building. Sometimes atmosphere has to grow into a building, but this has got it. But is there anything that you long to do that you're just not quite ready for? Anything that you need help with?
Yes, we ran a lunch club for the elderly and people that are on their own for many, many years. And we had a lovely lady and a team of people that cooked for our lunch club for over 20 years. And unfortunately, she's recently had to retire, well into her 80s. So we're looking for somebody new that loves to be around people, loves the elderly, is great at cooking. And if they'd be interested in coming along and joining our team, being part of this lovely atmosphere that you speak about, and it's so true, and enjoying our wonderful new and fully equipped catering kitchen.
Well, I've had a look at the kitchen and it's all set up there ready to offer the lunches. How many times in a week would you ideally like to have the lunch club?
Just one day a week. We've always run it on a Tuesday lunchtime, and we've had some very faithful people coming along, building great relationships together, enjoying the food. One gentleman walked in just a week ago asking when the luncheon club was going to restart and said he'd happily come for beans on toast every week. So there's a real need within the community to be able to bring these people together, and a wonderful opportunity for them to share over a meal.
That would be lovely. So if you're good at beans on toast, then come and talk to Captain Rachel. If they give the office a call, what's the number?
627 742.
obviously, worship every Sunday morning is at the core of everything that you do, and it's open to everyone. What can people expect if they came along to the Army on a Sunday morning? First of all, what time do you have your worship?
We have our Sunday worship at 10:30 every Sunday morning. Everybody is welcome. When you come in, you'll just feel at home. Oh, that's my vision. Everybody will feel very welcome. There's different expressions of worship through our brass band, through our songsters who are our choir. We've got the spoken word, the living word that will encourage you. It's just a family environment. So from the young to the old, everybody's welcome to join us. We have a Sunday school the kids move at, and it's called Mustard Seeds, where they have a great time of spiritual nurture, time of fun and games. And again, they've got a great little group that will take part in Sunday school.
I will be back for your official opening. Just for the moment, Captains Rachel and Dylan Nevoet, thank you very much indeed for sparing some time to talk to me, and we wish you a truly blessed celebration as you officially open this building.
Amen. Thank you very much, Judith.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The title of the melody the band were playing there, and I'm sure there will be many words of thanks and appreciation exchanged at the official opening of the new Salvation Army Church and Community Centre next Saturday afternoon. The opening ceremony will be conducted by General Lyndon Buckingham, the leader of the Salvation Army throughout the world, and this will be the first time a general has visited the island since the mid-1930s. There'll be other high-ranking officers accompanying the general, and I hope to bring you interviews alongside a report on the opening ceremony itself when I'm at your service at this time next Sunday morning. As you might imagine, the official opening is by invitation only, but worship at 10:30 next Sunday morning is open to everyone. So if you'd like to see the new building, just go along and you will be made most welcome. On last week's programme, I was in St Thomas's Church chatting with the vicar, Reverend Liz Hull, who was anxiously awaiting the arrival of Gaia, the Earth art installation created by artist Luke Jerram. Measuring 6 metres in diameter, Gaia is an internally lit sphere created from detailed NASA imagery of planet Earth's surface, a view that only an astronaut could see. Well, it's safely here now, floating in the expanse of St Thomas's Church, a truly awe-inspiring sight. And the skills and experience of two people in particular have made this possible. One is our own Justin McMullen of ELS, who has an enviable reputation on the island for covering all the technical, sound and lighting demands of everything from the TT launch to a Christmas nativity in Strand Street and a rock concert to a standard so high that it would rival any venue across. The other is Ben Osborne, and wherever Gaia goes, so also does Ben Osborne. He works on behalf of the artist Luke Jerram, supervising the installation, and, as you'll hear, he's really appreciated all the help Justin has given him. So let's hear first from Ben and then from Justin.
Hi, Judith. I work on behalf of Luke, so I do the installations, but I didn't work on the creation. The artwork itself is created by a Bristol company. It's Luke's idea, and he's also a Bristol-based company.
Now, Gaia has been in other places. It started its life in the Anglican Cathedral in Liverpool. I would guess, Ben, that every place brings a unique challenge.
Yes, it certainly does. It's been all over the world and many different locations, indoors and outdoors. And so, yeah, there's different challenges everywhere you go.
So, really, until you you get it into the building, you can't really fine-tune it till then, can you?
No, that's why it's great to have people like Justin on the location, because he obviously got a great idea of how things are installed, and it's made my job very easy arriving to such a professional delivery.
This has been one of those challenges that we've spent a number of months looking at this and how to do it.
Here in St Thomas's, the benches are still in the church.
They are, that's right. The pews are still here. They're fixed and not movable, which was one of the first challenges, actually, Judith, that we had to overcome, was how do we get the installation up? And we're talking a good, 15 to 17 metres up in the air. There's not really a lot of things on the island that can reach that height where we can get them inside this space. We looked at hoists, we looked at the largest set of ladders, whether they were up on a platform, and trying to conform to all the health and safety protocols that you have to these days, that became a real big challenge for us. How do we get this rigged up there where we can get access to the motor points, etc., that we need for it? So first challenge to overcome was the pews. Scaffold it was the answer in the end. A giant scaffold, what they call a bird cage, was built. And if you'd have come in the other day here, it was phenomenal seeing the lads from Red Scaffolding. They did a great job, didn't they, Ben?
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic team of lads. They put a scaffold up for us right to the point where we needed to get to. So we were working 16 metres up in the air on top of the scaffold platform, putting in all the rigging equipment and the strops, and it's been fantastic. So challenge overcome.
A great team effort here. Jade and her gang from Net Zero have been fantastic to deal with. They've done a wonderful job of getting this in, and it has been a challenge. And also Orsted sponsors who've got themselves behind this and helped support the whole project. I think it's imperative that we mention those, and I don't know who all the other sponsors are. Without people like that getting behind these projects, you'll never be able to pull them off.
You're absolutely right. Sponsorship has been key to this, and Net Zero and Orsted are massively concerned with the protection of the planet.
Right,
and sometimes you have to do big things.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. And also the people here at St Thomas's, Liz and Mike, that are working away in the background as we speak, they've done an amazing job. And it's a beautiful church. It'd be easy to live on this island, I imagine, and not know how beautiful it is in here. The painting's incredible.
Ben Osborne is absolutely right. The outside of St Thomas's Church, just off the promenade, close to the villa and the Gaiety Theatre, here in the cultural quarter of Douglas, can look quite dull. But not right now, because yesterday the Flower Tower, which made its first appearance last summer, was put back. This huge cascade of knitted and crocheted flower heads is once again flowing down from the high louvered windows to the pavement on the seaside of St Thomas's Church Tower. So not one, but two art installations for you to enjoy. Maybe you're going to see Gaia not knowing much about the church itself, so I thought it might be good to include something that I found just earlier this week in the archive room. In the mid-1980s, Reverend David Bush, at one time Vicar of Moroun, produced and presented an excellent series of Sunday morning programmes for Manx Radio called Keystones, in which he explored the history of the island's churches and chapels in conversation with local people. Let's join him now with St Thomas's parishioner Mrs Flanagan, born in the early 1900s and a lifelong member of St Thomas's church family. A present-day church often stands on or close to the site of a much earlier church or chapel building. But not so St Thomas's. Its history is very different.
St Thomas's is a parish now within its own right, but it hasn't always been. What was it originally, Mrs Flanagan?
The town was growing and the population increasing. When Bishop Ward came in 1828, he found an urgent need for more churches and better conditions for the clergy, and the bishop applied to the Lord of the Admiralty for the loan of a naval vessel to use as a floating chapel.
Is this floating chapel new to the island? I've never heard of that being here.
It was stationed, as they called it, at the North Quay. It was to be fitted up in a neat manner, capable of accommodating more than 200 people, to be called the De Grey, and it came from Plymouth.
Perhaps in stormy weather, a little bit uncomfortable holding your services.
And also it got out of condition over the years. 1845, we read of the closing of the floating chapel, the reason given being that the deck wants repairing and there are no funds. It was sold, and the money went towards the building of St Thomas's Church.
So we're now talking about the 1840s, was it?
1845.
Yes, and the foundation stone was laid.
A circular letter was distributed showing a sketch of the church. The architect was Ewan Christian, a Manxman.
Yes, he's the one that came to be the president of the Royal Institute of British Architects.
Yes, the same Ewan Christian, very well-known architect from London. And it was called the New Church of St. Thomas, Douglas Isle of Man, 1846. The foundation stone was laid in 1847.
And was the church consecrated as soon as it was built?
The church was not consecrated then. Sadly, it became embroiled in a long and bitter dispute between the then Vicar of Braddon and the then Bishop of Soder and Man, which went on for many years, and for a long time the church was actually closed, only reopening in 1872. And now, Reverend David Bush, speaking here almost 40 years ago, could easily be talking about stepping into St. Thomas's Church this very day.
As you come into the church, you get a great feeling of the building soaring upwards, up to heaven perhaps, but also into darkness and into mystery, the columns, the arches, the roof trusses, and the lovely East End windows. It takes quite a while for your eyes to become acclimatized to the low light, but it does perhaps create a feeling of what's often called the numinous, or a feeling of serenity, which can lead on to feelings of the close presence of God. But let's walk to the side of the church and then look up. So from here you see one of the most beautiful and notable features of the interior, the murals of the great Manx artist John Nicholson. Mrs. Flanagan, tell us something more about these wonderful murals.
Canon Savage came and suggested redecorating the church. A lot had to be done, the walls had to be washed, and Mr. John Miller Nicholson, grandfather of the present John, undertook the decoration, the murals as we call them now.
These murals, of course, warrant a lot more study than we can give them today, but I think this should give you enough just to excite your curiosity to come and see them if you haven't seen them before. But apart from the murals, some of the other interesting features are the fine oak carvings. The first thing that we see as we come into the church is the screen which separates the nave from the chancel. And as we look through it, we see a lot of very fine carvings, both on the screen and the pulpit itself. This screen and pulpit, Mrs. Flanagan, were given by one of the much-loved members of the congregation, I believe.
The reredos was given by Mr. William Clegg, organist, and his sisters in 1929. Strangely enough, as a thank offering for the reopening of the church in 1872.
The other interesting feature here, as I say, is the screen, which used to contain a brass plate, I believe. I haven't seen it myself, but you were saying that this has a brass plate which contains rather unusual words and instructions on it.
To all who hereafter shall have charge of this church, the woodwork shall never be defiled or defaced by nails or other mischievous devices for fixing decorations in honour of the festivals of the church.
I've never heard of mischievous devices being used in church, but if you look at the carvings there, you see the wonderful abundance of imagination that we use. The flowers and the leaves around the pulpit, everyone's different. As far as I can see, there are at least 40 of them. And look at those angels on top of the screen. They all seem to have individual features, to be actual people that they're modelled on. There's another fine carved oak feature in the memorial chapel, which is the canopy over the altar. Can we go and look at this, and you can tell us, Mrs. Flanagan, something about this?
The Chapel of Remembrance for the Fallen of the First War was hallowed by the Lord Bishop of Soder and Man, Reverend W. Stanton Jones, on Easter Day, 1939.
And the underside of the canopy itself seems to contain many features that indicate occupations, interests, natural features, spinning wheels, and all sorts of other things that relate to life on the Isle of Man. To appreciate St. Thomas's fully, you've got to come and study the church quietly and carefully, the murals, the carvings, the mosaics, and everything else. Come and see them and try and absorb the beauty that you find in them. We're told that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It is here. Come and feel it and then thank God for it.
And I feel sure that the Reverend David Bush would say the same words were he back in St. Thomas's Church now and standing under Gaia with Justin McMullen and Ben Osborne.
As you can see, as we're stood underneath it right now, you know, it's rotating at the speed of the Earth would do. It's beautiful, isn't it?
And you've got this wonderfully atmospheric soundtrack that has been created specially for it.
Yes, it's a 29-minute soundscape to accompany the art piece, and it gives a really good frame. So if you arrive and give yourself enough time to listen to the whole soundtrack, it gives you the moments to de-stress.
It's a headspace without a doubt, isn't it? Yeah. And it really does immerse you, doesn't it, Ben? It's a fantastic soundtrack. And it's made up of so many different components, and that's the whole point. There's an underlying tone, isn't there? There's a tune almost in the background. And then you've got voices talking over it. You've got the different languages of around the world. It's been very, very cleverly put together.
Do you think that we underestimate how important this kind of experience is for us? And I think there's a great wisdom in that when you book a ticket, which incidentally for most things is free, they are for a 45-minute slot. So really you would encourage people to use every minute of that, wouldn't you, Ben?
I certainly would, yeah. Give yourself enough time to forget about the outside world for a moment. And it's a fantastic platform to discuss, stimulate conversation about where we're at as a species today and how we are going to progress. And the overview effect is particularly impressive once you stand back and realise that it's all our planet. There's no denominations and there's no creeds, races, colours. When we stand back and look at our planet, we're all the same species living on the same planet.
And there's something about it that reproduces the fragility of it.
I totally agree with that. There was a couple of moments where, you know, I stood back on the balcony there and just looked at it and thought, wow, you know, it really puts everything in perspective. And I think people who'll come to experience this, it's absolutely right that they have that 45-minute experience of the music. It's a full soundtrack. It lasts that length of time. That's the whole point of it. And it's that immersive experience of just sitting back, relaxing, and just letting everything just kind of just go into the back of your mind and, you know, watching it rotate. It's peaceful, isn't it? I mean, just now, Judith, while we're looking at it, it's just phenomenal, isn't it?
There's certainly no borders visible while we look at the planet from space, so it's a very levelling experience. If only everybody in the world could see that it's our planet, there is no borders. You can chart the observation of climate change and our planet as directly correlation to the time that we're able to get into space, because when people first started looking at the planet as a whole thing rather than separate countries, it created a different perspective for humans to see that it is actually our planet rather than a divided world.
Can't be a divided world, can we?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And it really does put everything in perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you, Justin McMullen and Ben Osborne. And tonight, there's a unique opportunity to sing Songs of Praise under Gaia, a celebration of creation through music. It's tonight in St. Thomas's at 6:30. No tickets are needed and everyone's welcome. Sponsors Orsted and Net Zero have lots of information in St. Thomas's about the island's climate change action plan, and their website, netzero.im, is where you can get free tickets for daytime visits to see Gaia and tickets, for which there are some charges, for the many evening events taking place under Gaia in St. Thomas's. And Gaia, which is supported by the Isle of Man Arts Council and Biosphere Isle of Man, as well as Orsted and Net Zero, will be in place until May the 12th. And I'm afraid that's all that we have time for now, but I'll be back later in our virtual lounge tonight from 9 o'clock onwards with our usual mix of easy listening music, your requests and dedications, and I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning.
Steve.